You're listening to The Point. Research has shown that adolescents who use drugs and alcohol are more likely to become addicted later in life than those who put off using until they reach their early 20s. For those adolescents who do start smoking, drinking, or using drugs, getting them access to treatment and ongoing supports is key to breaking the cycle of addiction. Recovery Build is a new Cape-based program to support teens in recovery and help prevent relapse. Joining us to discuss the program is Stephanie Brody. She's the co-founder of Behavioral Health and Innovators. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mindy.
Amanda McGarrigle, who's the program director at Recovery Build.
Good morning.
And Megan Perry, certified recovery coach for Recovery Build. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so there's some good news around teen substance use. Statistics show that smoking, drinking, and drug use is down among teens over the past decade. A notable exception is marijuana use, which has remained steady. So the trend is positive, but there's still an alarming number of adolescents struggling with addiction. So how big of an issue is this in our region, and what are the trends that we're seeing? Anybody who wants to jump in?
So I will start. This is Stephanie. And first, I just want to thank you, Mindy, for giving us this opportunity to talk about the program, about Recovery Build. Recovery Build, just so folks know what it is, it's an after-school program for students needing recovery support. And what we're seeing in our work with students, we did a youth summit last year, is that the incidence of use of marijuana is really prevalent. I know what the statistics are saying, but students are looking at marijuana as just a natural substance that will relax them before an exam, for example, or just take the edge off before a date. So to address social anxiety type issues. So I'm seeing a lot of that.
Yeah. I just want to say the natural substance. I mean, that really, the marijuana that we're seeing today is not the same thing
right.
that we were seeing in like the 60s and
right.
70s. They don't know that.
They know that. I mean, when you say, do they know that, they're told that. They don't hear that. That's not heard at all, especially with the legalization of marijuana
yeah.
and on what's, yeah, on the Cape. So they're not hearing that. We had a panel of students in recovery from a recovery high school speak at the Youth Summit, and the question was asked of them, what was the drug they started with before they became addicted later on to different substances? And they all answered weed.
Mm. So how does this Recovery Build work into the larger treatment program for adolescents?
So it's a program that can work before treatment, during treatment, and after treatment. So it serves youth with moderate to mild substance use challenges. Substance use disorder is the medical term. But it will provide a safe, supportive peer environment for young people to address whatever issues they're having and really getting upstream from the substance use. So it may be a trauma issue or an anxiety issue that is, precipitating the use of substances.
Right. For social pressures seem to be magnified in adolescence. There are pressures to experiment or use substances, but also stigma associated with addiction or seeking treatment. It's really kind of a fine line for adolescents to walk. So what do you hear from the teens themselves about social pressures? Anybody?
There are a lot of social pressures to be the best at whatever you're doing, whether that be the best in sports, the best in a certain class, to be the best friend, to be the closest one to, to be whatever it is in your social group. And I think that if you are not the leader of the group, if you're sort of on the outside, whatever the leader says goes. Mm. And I know that that was true for me when I was growing up in high school, and here we are 20 years later. And I think that the pressures are even more so now.
Yeah.
And there are fewer opportunities where a teenager can voice what's actually going on with them. Fewer opportunities where they feel like they're being heard.
And you're mentioning the leader, whatever the leader says goes. And probably a lot more so than when we were kids because of the social media thing. It's not like you can go home and go, okay, I don't have to deal with that.
Right.
You're still dealing with
right.
it.
It's attached to you at all times.
24/7.
Right.
Wow.
And I think we overlook the fact that it's not just peer pressure to experiment with marijuana or alcohol as sort of like a party culture type of thing, that being the best at things and that performance-driven mm-hmm. sort of idea leads kids to do, stimulants like Adderall or Ritalin to perform on tests, or maybe they're using painkillers so that they can be in the football game. So it's not just sort of what we traditionally think mm-hmm. of as, the party kids mm-hmm. or the...
Right.
The kids that are doing bad badly in other areas. It's a lot of times it's the kids that are performing at such a high level, and everybody sort of looks at that as a successful teen.
Right. And then rather really than surprised when that's not the case.
Right.
Yeah. So leaving a peer group, even one that you might not like, is tough. So talk about the community you hope Recovery Build will offer teens.
We right now are hoping for a safe and mostly fun. We want to create some fun. One of the things that I've heard the most, I've been working with teenagers on Cape Cod for the last 10 years or so, is that there's nothing to do on Cape Cod. So you hear that and, you know, we all sort of roll our eyes. But if you aren't into going on a nature walk, if you aren't into, you know, just window shopping, those kind of things, or maybe you don't even like going to the beach, you know, what is it that you do want to do? And how can we as the APG facilitate you having fun? So this is a place where you want to be, that you want to bring your friends to, so you don't have to sit at home alone and scroll your newsfeed or take, you know, we want to create this place that feels good, like where kids are being heard.
And also I think, you know, we want to sort of by default make recovery look attractive. So there's not a lot of that that's modeled anywhere for young people. If you look at the dominating culture and the media and TV shows and all of that, there's a lot of substance use by teens in that. And where are the people that are just modeling that you can have an amazing life without drugs and alcohol? And so, you know, by having a recovery coach and you know, where our goal is to have teen mentors and young adult mentors and that sort of thing, that we just show that life can be amazing in recovery. And so, you know, modeling that and just demonstrating that is a huge part of what we do.
Yeah, and that sort of seems to be a trend right now. I'm thinking of Stella Wolf and her programs of the, you know, substance-free socials, whatever
they have. Sober socials.
Sober socials, which she's not the only one doing that. So that seems to kind of be a trend, which is a good thing, I would think, for some of these kids who are really struggling with recovery. All right, so what are some of the skills that can help teens cope with the stress of both addiction and lifestyle changes that come with successful treatment?
I would say some of the skills would be learning self-regulation. I think so often, you know, we've been showing the movie Angst, which is a short documentary about anxiety and how soon it presents in children's lives and then bleeds into the adolescents' lives, and how that anxiety, you know, it's no one knows how to regulate that. And so the easiest thing would be to take a pill from the medicine cabinet or to smoke some pot. So I think that we're really going to be talking about feeling good in your body, feeling safe in your body, being able to access and understand and acknowledge emotions. We spend so many times, you know, either liking or loving or being sad about something. But, like, I think that there's been a loss of truly connecting to an emotion.
Don't be sad.
Yeah.
It's okay to be sad.
Right. It is okay to be sad. And how can we sit in sadness for a little while and then find the strength to do what we have to do next instead of it being this instant thing that needs to change,
and not having to do it alone.
Yes,
you know, having human connection with others that you can walk that with. I think again, like, sort of our culture does not encourage that. We go home and cry alone if we have to cry,
right?
And or even celebrating is, you know, this is how we celebrate with alcohol or whatever. You know, the adults are modeling that as well, but just, you know, learning that. How fulfilling and connected you can feel when you have strong relationships with your peer group, and that you can do those things together.
I would add, too, to the self-regulation, self-esteem, and self-efficacy. So a lot of the young people that we've been working with, you know, they don't know how to cook. I mean, they have, you know, kind of stepped out of, like, just the fun of being a human and doing the normal human things. And when they, you know, learn how to make a smoothie or figure out, you know, how to do some task on their own, that self-competency gives them the dopamine hit that they're looking for elsewhere and gives them, you know, that kind of natural, you know, feel-good feeling.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So how do you talk with adolescents about relapse?
That it can be part of a recovery And that recovery is often not a destination, and it truly is a journey. And there are going to be missteps, whether that means you relapse by using a drug or you relapse into a behavior that takes you to a place where you don't like being. It is all part of it. Of course, we want to teach them as many relapse prevention skills as possible, mm-hmm. you know, trigger warnings and things like that. But that it's part of it, can be part of it, and it's not something to be ashamed of.
Right. All right, Anne is giving us a call from Orleans. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. Great program. I just want to suggest that there is something out there for teens, particularly in Orleans, and I'm sure in other areas of the state. It's an Alateen program. AA is covering pretty much a lot of programs for adults and teens. So I think some issue with this.
We're having a little trouble understanding Anne. I think she's on a speakerphone, so I can't. Did you get what she was saying?
Yes, I was listening.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that there is Al-Anon and Alateen, and I do understand that. What we are finding in terms, what we're hearing from the teenagers is that that isn't where they want to go. And it has been something that has given people a great sense of recovery here on Cape Cod. For whatever reason, I'm sure it would take some longitudinal mm-hmm. study, the teens are... they don't want to go to the traditional 12-step programs right now.
So I have another option.
It's just another option.
And it's right. more than the recovery meeting. I mean, this is really what Amanda said. This is fun social
community,
activities. It's
right.
a community. I mean, the Alateen groups are communities as well, but the social aspect of it makes it much more comprehensive for them. Like, if this is a second home.
And also the clinical... we have a clinical element that involves the families, and I think that's super important, is that mm-hmm. it's not just the teen who has to walk this journey, it's the family as well. And so mm-hmm. having a family education and support element to it,
right.
I think is a really strong part of what we do. Mm-hmm.
So what's the role of the recovery coaches, and how available are coaches to those in the program?
So the role of a recovery coach is to absolutely model you know, life in recovery as being a positive and attractive thing, to encourage and motivate and, you know, walk through obstacles with the, you know, whoever it is that's on the journey. You know, we do wellness plans, we do activity planning. You know, my role is really to make it fun, to make it so it's a safe, positive space that they want to be in. And then, you know, sort of along the way, teach some of those recovery principles and you know, the self-efficacy. You know, it's kind of a very holistic approach to recovery support.
You mentioned families. So how much involvement do parents and siblings have in the treatment program?
We are, when a young adult enrolls, we are also asking for the parents to commit to join a certain number of family sessions. There will be parent sessions. And we are also choosing to say family is anyone as you want to call them, your family. You know, who do you trust? Who's in your circle? So we want to do an educational component, you know, address how the parents are handling their own responses to what's going on with their children, mm-hmm. How the family communicates. That's going to be a big part of it, is that we have the parents are buying in as well. Part of the kid being in, part of the young adult being in the APG, is that we want the parents there to do their work too as a family.
So managing addiction, navigating the social pressures, and keeping up with academics is a lot. Mm-hmm. So do schools or adjustment counselors in the schools work with you to support teens in this program?
So we're building those relationships now, those connections. We've been to many, many schools on the Cape. They're all very excited about this resource. It's an additional resource for the adjustment counselors and for the guidance counselors at the schools. And we're working out the processes now by which, you know, families and teens will learn about the program and will feel like they want to at least investigate it and see what it offers for their young person. Mm-hmm. So particularly, you know, in Nauset and in Barnstable and in Dennis Yarmouth and Monomoy, they're all very interested in the program. I saw Susan Whitcomb leave mm-hmm. the earlier interview, and, you know, she's been a terrific supporter of the program. And there is an issue too, Mindy, of, you know, everybody knows who the kids are that need this. The kids don't know that they need it yet.
Right.
I mean, it's a disease that they, first of all, they're teens. They don't want anything to be abnormal mm-hmm. about them. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for them to admit that. And what we're seeing is friends are bringing friends to us. And it's the friends, you know, impetus and their kind of like invitation that's getting this young people to come.
Yeah. You mentioned marijuana use seem less concerning, if you will, for some and even for some parents. So how do you talk to teens about marijuana use when there's sort of this kind of conflicting message that's being sent to them?
Well, all of the decriminalization and the legalization of marijuana that's happening sort of culturally still is for adults 18 and over. So that's often a conversation. We can talk a little bit about the scientific effects. You know, your brain is still growing and maturing until the age of 24. And to start adding habitual marijuana use in there, these are the statistics. Mm-hmm. They don't really want to hear statistics. So it's hard. Yeah. It's going to be, we're going to have to get very creative about how we try and get that through.
Yeah. What about the opioid addiction epidemic? How do they react? Does it scare them?
I think they have the universal adolescent belief that it won't happen to them.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, when they're in their, you know, early teens and mid-teens, and they're experimenting with other substances, they never believe that they're going to land at the other end of the spectrum.
Right.
You know, and as a person in recovery myself, that is exactly what I believed, you know, back in middle school or whatever. I'm just doing this. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But that line, yeah.
I can
moving.
Say no. Yeah.
Right.
When I get to that point. Yeah.
Right. And they will listen to their peers. I mean, yes. they do not like statistics. They don't like listening to anything that the adults are saying, but
right.
they will listen to peers in recovery. And that's really the key, the mm-hmm. kind of secret ingredient to their recovery.
So who's eligible to participate in the Recovery Build program?
Right now we're looking in age range of 13 to 19, depending on if we can branch off into two different groups, you know, on the higher end of teenage years mm-hmm. and then the middle school age. And whoever's struggling with substance abuse, substance misuse, whoever has a question about it, maybe their friend is struggling and they want to know some more information. We really want it to be a place where they can come and get resources and be heard.
And where is this being offered?
This is being offered at 209 Main Street in Hyannis.
Mm-hmm. So any school district could take part if they want
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we talk a lot about drug use prevention and education and messaging. How can we better tailor that messaging and information to adolescents, since we know that the knowledge of the risk doesn't prevent them from engaging in the behavior, mm-hmm. as we're saying, and they like to hear from other teens? What can we, I mean, I think the schools have come around to doing a better job than we have done, at least in the past decade, but what are your thoughts on how we tailor that message?
First of all, I'll defer to my friends here for that specific answer, but to create the space where they can actually talk about it mm-hmm. is critical. There's very few programs within schools where students feel like they can say, they can speak freely and say whatever their concern is. Mm-hmm. So to create more of that space for them, we've, you know, again, at the Youth Summit did it off site. So none of them were at their schools. They were with different kids. They were mixed up with different kids. So there wasn't any kind of, you know, oh my goodness, is my teacher going to know I asked this question? And is she going to figure out, you know, it's kind of like mining the data. Is she going to find out something about me?
Yeah, I think the message coming from each other is really important, because I think a lot of our prevention work is adults talking to youth and come in and tell you how scary my life ended up, mm-hmm. and you don't want to do that. And I think more like what Stephanie's talking about is having a conversation where they can work with and talk to each other, mm-hmm. Because the reality is that substance use is a huge problem in youth, but the majority of youth are not using substances. And when we can access that and have them work together and have more sort of truth in the conversation and let them have the conversation, that's a lot much more likely to influence them. And my main message, because I do prevention work, is just wait. I'm not saying don't ever, you can't, it's bad.
Just wait,
Just wait a little while. Yeah. You don't have to
just
do
wait
it
till
now.
Your brain's developed.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, again, back to that statistic from Dr. Ruth Pody. If you can wait until 24 when your brain is, you have a less than 1% chance of becoming an addict. That, it's just mind-blowing to me, that statistic. All right, quickly, a special event coming up, an open house.
Yes, the open house is on May 17th. It's at 209 Main Street Peer Recovery from 2 to 4 p.m. And we also have a fundraiser, Yogis Unite fundraiser, yoga studios on Cape Cod are getting together on June 23rd at Monomoy High School. It's open to the public, and it's another fundraiser for Recovery Build.
All right. So we will have more information about Recovery Build and their Yogathon June 23rd to support their programming at our website, capeandislands.org. Stephanie Brody, co-founder of Behavioral Health Innovators, Amanda McGurkle, program director of Recovery Build, and Megan Perry, certified recovery coach for Recovery Build. Thank you for being here, and such an interesting concept. I hope to learn more from you in the future how it goes. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. Mm-hmm.